And where does Miner live?
Yes.
He has an apartment in Bern, but his main home is in Lucerne.
The Lions of Lucerne.
You might not have been reaching very far at all.
63. The next morning, Scott used the color kit Claudia had bought with their groceries and dyed his hair once again. He wanted to return to his sandy brown, but he needed two applications to cover up the white blonde, and subsequently ended up with a much darker shade than he'd hoped for. At least it didn't all fall out, which had been a definite possibility with all of the chemicals it had been subjected to in the last couple of days. With his hair short, yet conservatively colored, hopefully, no one would bother to give him a second look. After straightening up the house and boarding up the broken window as best they could, Scott and Claudia left to pursue the only other lead they had, a package mailed from a small village north of Lucerne called Hochdorf.
"Do you think he'll tell us anything?" asked Scott.
"We won't know until we try, will we?"
Claudia responded.
"And you're sure he's somehow connected?"
"Of course I'm sure. When Miner had refused to meet and answer my questions, I began following him. That's how I learned about the post office box in Interlaken. I also found he had one in Lucerne. After he and I had lunch, I thought there was little chance I would be able to get anything on him. He went on vacation, but I kept watching both of his post boxes, hoping to get lucky. A few days ago, a package arrived for him in Lucerne."
"Which, of course, you borrowed, steamed open, copied the contents of, and then replaced."
"You're very smart. Yes, I made copies of the contents. It held his passport, cancelled train tickets, and credit card receipts. They showed that he had been in Greece, Italy, and France before returning home."
"Was he out of the country during the time of President Rutledge's kidnapping?"
"Yes, but according to the stamps in his passport, he was in Europe, not America."
"Of course not. That would be too obvious. What's the connection with the cousin in Hochdorf?"
"I don't know. I'm hoping he will tell us. Who else could send Miner a package from Hochdorf, if not his cousin? My files show he's the only relative Miner has there. It has to be the cousin. Miner wouldn't go up to Hochdorf just to mail himself a package."
"What if he left it there while visiting, and the cousin just mailed it back to him?"
"And what were you saying about going with your gut? At this point, this is all we have to go on."
An hour outside Lucerne, Claudia pulled into a rest area.
"I need to call the office and let them know I won't be in."
"Don't forget to see if you can get someone to look a bit deeper into Miner's file, to see if there are any links between him and Yugoslavia."
"I'll see what I can do."
Scott got out of the car and stretched his legs, while Claudia went inside to use the phone. At a payphone by the washrooms, she inserted her telephone card and dialed her office.
"Christina, hello, it's Claudia. I'm not going to be in today. I have some outside work to do. Do I have any messages, please?"
"Herr Schnell has been looking everywhere for you. Hold a moment, I will connect you."
Schnell? What could he possibly want, she wondered. 10 seconds later, a gruff voice roughened from years of cigarette smoke was on the line.
"Where are you?"
"Good morning, Herr Schnell," Claudia politely replied.
"Don't good morning me. Where are you?"
"Why, what's going on?"
"Where were you last Saturday?"
"I was pursuing leads in my case."
"Where was that?"
"The Jungfrau area."
"And did you stay at your parents' farm in Grindelwald?"
"Yes, but..."
He cut her off.
"And where were you all day Sunday and Sunday evening until now?"
Claudia was getting very suspicious. He couldn't possibly know already that she had been in his house. She wanted to explain things to him, but decided she wouldn't give out any more information until she had some of her own.
"I was with a friend."
Quickly, before Herr Schnell could fire off another question, she asked one of her own.
"What is this all about?"
"What this is all about is that for the longest time, I couldn't understand why you were not making any progress on the weapons case."
"It has been extremely difficult. There are not many leads."
"I spoke with Ariane Kues at The Hague. She had some very interesting things to say about you."
"About me?"
Claudia had no idea where this was going.
"She says you volunteered for this case."
That is correct, but I don't understand.
So, you don't deny it?
No, of course not. Herr Schnell, I must respectfully insist that you get to the point.
He did. They had a brief exchange of words, and when Schnell was finished speaking, all Claudia could do was set the phone down and walk back out to the car, stunned. Scott sensed something was wrong right away.
Are you okay? What happened?
Claudia started the car and backed out of their parking space faster than safe driving dictated.
Claudia, hold on a second. What's wrong?
She gripped the steering wheel with all of her might, as if somehow it could purge the anger from her body.
Yesterday, the police raided my parents' farm in Grindelwald.
Raided? What happened? Are they okay?
Physically, I'm sure they're fine, but they're probably very shaken. They're much too old for this.
For what? Why were the police there?
They had an anonymous tip.
Tip about what?
After a thorough search of the barn, the police found two ADATs.
ADATs? As in Swiss anti-tank missiles?
Yes.
Let me guess. The serial numbers on the missiles
matched the ones that were stolen from the weapons depot outside Basel.
Claudia, I don't know what to say.
I do. Someone is going to pay.
64. Even though she was stunned, Claudia had still been able to think on her feet. If Deputy Federal Attorney Urs Schnell hoped to have any sort of future with the Bundesanwaltschaft, the last thing he needed was a scandal that would engulf his entire office on his very first big case. Seeing the logic of Claudia's argument and trusting her promise that she would not go to the press, Schnell agreed to give her 48 hours before turning herself in. She assured him she would have answers by then. If only she could assure herself of the same thing.
I never did like anonymous tips. They always smell bad, said Scott.
From what I can tell, I don't think my boss likes them either, and that's why he agreed to hold everything for 48 hours.
That and the fact that he doesn't want a scandal on his hands.
There'll be a scandal, all right, but it won't involve me or my office. It's going to have to do with Swiss intelligence and Gerhard Meiner.
Well, you better do some fast thinking. You've only got 48 hours.
And what about you?
Me? I have no idea how much time I have left. You forget there are people with guns looking for me.
I'm not convinced the shooters in the Ice Palace weren't there for me as well. Someone might have seen me putting your letter back in the post office box after I made a copy of it.
Don't tell me we're actually going to fight over who's going to die first.
No, we need to be serious. Why were the weapons planted in my family's barn?
That one's easy. You're getting too close to the truth.
We both are. And the closer we get, the less time we have.
Before driving into the village of Hochdorf, Claudia explained to Scott that she would need to question Miner's cousin in German. Harbath would not be able to open his mouth, but his silence would make him very intimidating, kind of a Swiss spin on good cop, bad cop. Wilhelm Schreppel Carpentry was not hard to find. Claudia parked her Volkswagen across the street, and they entered the small shop. A set of diminutive cowbells rang above the door, announcing their presence. They looked around the showroom as they waited for the shopkeeper to come up front. Harvath traced his finger across one of the shelves and lifted it up to show Claudia the dust.
"Not much of a housekeeper, I'm afraid," came a voice in German.
Harvath and Claudia looked up to see a tall, handsome man with gray hair and a fading tan appear from the back wearing an apron. Claudia was immediately struck by how much he looked like Miner.
"I've just returned from vacation and haven't gotten caught up with my housework," he said.
"Vacation," said Claudia. "That sounds nice. Where did you go?"
"Southern Europe."
"Really? Where exactly? I love Southern Europe."
"I was in Greece for a bit."
"Greece? Now that's a nice spot. How long were you gone?"
"A little bit. I'm sorry, but can I help you with something? I'm quite busy today."
"I hope you can," said Claudia, presenting her credentials. "I'm Claudia Mueller, and this is Hans-Peter Sampras. We're from the Bundesanwaltschaft, the Investigative Affairs Division, the Bundespolizei."
The Bundespolizei? What do you want with me? I haven't done anything.
The man was obviously nervous.
Let's talk about your recent vacation, said Claudia. Did you go anywhere else besides Greece?
Schreppel might have been nervous, but he wasn't stupid. Why hadn't Gerhard warned him about the possibility that this might happen? Was it his fault? He had done everything his cousin had told him to, right down to the very last detail, except the package. Miner had told him to mail it when he changed trains in Bern, but Schreppel had desperately wanted a coffee and to buy some cigarettes. It wasn't until he had boarded his new train that he realized he had forgotten to mail the package, so he sent it from Hochdorf when he got home. He talked to the Bundespolizei and then called Gerhard and let him know what took place. Gerhard would be able to fix it. He could do anything. There was nothing he needed to worry about. After all, he had been on an official state mission helping his cousin and, in his own small way, his country. The Bundespolizei were just too stupid to know it. They were messing with the wrong family. When he called Gerhard, though, he would conveniently forget to mention that he had not mailed the package from Bern as he was instructed.
No, just Greece, he said. Everything else is too expensive.
I see, replied Claudia. So, just Greece?
Yes.
The man eyed the woman's silent partner nervously.
And, of course, your passport will show the appropriate stamps for this vacation?
May I ask what this is regarding?
This is just a routine investigation, Herr Schreppel. It's nothing for you to be concerned about. Would you be so kind as to show us your passport?
I would be happy to, but first I would like to see your warrant.
Surely, Herr Schreppel, you don't have anything to hide and don't wish to complicate our investigation? If you would be so kind as to show us the passport, we will be on our way.
I think maybe I would like to call my attorney first.
Why would you need an attorney?
If the Bundespolizei came to your place of business and asked for your passport without an explanation, wouldn't you want to call your attorney? I work hard and mind my own affairs. The last time I checked the federal constitution, Switzerland was still a democracy. I don't much care for you or your questions. Until such time as you obtain a warrant, I suggest you leave me alone. Good day.
Claudia was stumped. He had her. What could she do? Put a gun to his head and demand to see his passport? She had nothing, but felt the need to leave him with something that would diminish his superior attitude.
Herr Schreppel, one more question before I go. You look quite similar to your cousin, Herr Meiner. I know him. The resemblance is uncanny. I will be back, and I will have a warrant for your passport. While I am at it, I will get one for his, too. You were both on vacation lately, and something tells me comparing your two passports is going to be quite interesting. Have a good day.
She turned and walked out of the shop, followed by Harvath, who didn't take his eyes off the man until they were on the street.
What was all that passport stuff about? Asked Scott.
Remember when I said I hoped he would be able to tell us something?
Yes.
Well, just seeing his face told me a lot. He's a dead ringer for Miner.
What's that got to do with his passport?
Everything. Think about it. How closely do busy passport control officers study passports?
Scott remembered how he had been able to breeze through two different passport controls with his Hans Brauner papers.
I don't know. It must vary.
Well, think about a nicely dressed middle-aged man on holiday.
I guess it wouldn't warrant too much scrutiny.
Even if it did, Schreppel so resembles Miner, I think he could pass the test.
Let's say you're right. What does it mean?
I think Miner bought his cousin a nice vacation, and all he had to do for it was be seen, get a passport stamped, and charge things on a credit card, all under the name of Gerhard Miner.
But what does Miner get for all this generosity?
The most priceless thing of all, an almost airtight alibi.
You're right.
Scott finally grasped what Claudia was saying.
And Miner's got one big problem now.
Yes, the airtight alibi is starting to leak.
A leak can be so drawn out and painful. Why don't we see if we can help tear it open?
65. 45 minutes after she left a message on his voicemail, Claudia's cell phone rang.
Müller,
she said.
Fräulein Müller, what a delightful surprise it was to get your message, said Gerhard Meiner.
I doubt that.
Why would you doubt that? I'm flattered to have the ardent attentions of such an attractive young woman.
Well then, you won't mind meeting me for lunch today.
I'm sorry. I'm much too busy. We'll do it soon, though.
I think that would be a mistake.
And why is that?
I have some very special information I think you might be interested in.
That's hard to imagine.
I can tell you, or the deputy federal attorney, or maybe even the press.
Fräulein Müller, I'm surprised you're even free to walk the streets. Are you not being brought up on charges by the deputy federal attorney?
Well, he's funny like that. He doesn't much care for anonymous tips. He says they...
Claudia shot a sideways glance at Scott.
He says they stink.
Stink?
The Americanism was lost briefly on Minor.
Yes. He much prefers first-hand accounts of things. Eyewitness testimony is so much more powerful, especially in court.
An anonymous tip versus, say,
the testimony of a carpenter from Hochdorf is so much more effective, wouldn't you agree?
There was absolute silence over the phone.
Herr Meiner, are you still there?
Quietly, Meiner responded,
Yes, I'm still here.
You haven't called him back yet, have you? You figured his message wasn't important enough. You'd wait until you felt like it to call him back. It's funny, but I could almost hear his fingers dialing your number the minute I left his shop.
What time?
What time did I leave his shop?
No, lunch. What time do you want to meet for lunch?
I'm quite busy today. Being framed for a major weapons theft creates all sorts of demands. Let me look at my book. Can you hold?
Claudia held her hand over the mouthpiece and waited several moments. She hoped he was good and pissed off. She enjoyed being in control for once.
Yes, Herr Meiner, sorry to keep you waiting. Let's say 3 o'clock, where we had our lovely lunch last time. The Hotel de Balance? I'll see you at 3.
Claudia punched the end button and severed the connection. 66. Setting the lunch appointment for 3 allowed Claudia and Scott plenty of time to surveil the Hotel de Balance and check for anything out of the ordinary. So far, it was clean. Claudia went in to get a table, and Scott stayed concealed in a shop across the courtyard from the hotel. From his vantage point, he would know if Minor came alone. Having already met the ringer of a cousin and knowing what kind of car Minor drove, it wasn't hard to spot him when he pulled up. Minor got out of the black Audi and went into the hotel. Scott waited, and, satisfied that he was alone, followed him inside. The hostess showed Scott to the table he had reserved earlier, not too close, but not too far away from the action if he was needed. Claudia and Minor were already deep in conversation when he passed.
As lovely as ever, Fräulein Müller.
You'll forgive me if I dispose of the pleasantries and get right to the point?
Of course, I will not forgive you. It isn't every day I get to enjoy lunch with a woman as beautiful as you, and I intend to do just that, said Minor, as he called the waiter over. Are you serving the roast duck today?
Yes, sir, said the waiter.
Good, that's what I will have, said Minor.
How about for you, Fräulein Müller?
Do you like duck? It's quite good here.
I'm more of a fish person.
Excellent. Then I highly recommend the lake trout, caught right here on our very own lake. What do you say?
Sounds fine to me, said Claudia.
Wonderful. Now, what do Americans like to eat?
Americans?
Asked a startled Claudia.
What do you mean? What do they like to...
Steak. That's what they like, said Minor, snapping his fingers, very pleased with himself. And we'll have a nice fillet, medium rare, for our friend.
For your friend, said the waiter.
Yes, he'll be joining us in a minute.
How about some wine, Fräulein Müller?
It was their first lunch all over again.
I'll be fine with a bottle of mineral water.
Well, I hope I'm not being rude. You did, after all, invite me to lunch, but there's nothing that compliments a good meal better than a good bottle of wine.
Let's see, I'm having duck, and certainly our American friend is a drinker. They all are, you know. And he's having steak. Why don't you bring us a nice Saint-Emilion wine? The Chateau Quercy is quite good. I'm sure Fräulein Müller is on an expense account, and I don't want her to get in any more trouble with her superiors. So make it something at least 7 years old, but not much more than that. Thank you. The waiter smiled, took their menus, and walked off for the kitchen. If nothing else, Miner was consistent. Even when the chips were stacked against him, as he must have known they were now, he was still bold enough to try and assume control of the situation. By the way, Herr Miner, I meant to ask you how you knew I was in trouble in the first place. You know what? I would hate to start this conversation without your colleague. That's him, isn't it? The one dining alone, pretending to read the paper on the upper level? Not exactly the table I would have chosen, but it provides a good view of the action. Why don't you wave him over, and then we can start? The fact that Miner had spotted Scott shouldn't have surprised her. He was good. Reluctantly, she gave in and kept waving until Scott understood his cover had been blown, and he made his way toward them.
Mr. Peter Sampras, I would like you to meet Gerhard Miner, Claudia said in English, as Harvath reached the table.
Come, come now. That hardly seems fair. Let's use one of Mr. Sampras's more endearing names, like Hans Brauner, or better yet, Agent Scott Harvath of the United States Secret Service. Claudia's eyes showed her surprise, something Miner never missed in his adversaries. Why so shocked, my dear? Our office receives the same updates to the watch list that yours does. Turning back to Scott, he said, Please, Agent Harvath, have a seat. I have taken the liberty of ordering a nice steak for you. You do like steak, don't you?
I do indeed. Thank you.
So, before I begin any conversation, there is a little formality. Well, more like a habit, really, that I like to indulge. Miner reached inside the right side of his blazer, but Scott was faster reaching into his.
Not so fast, Jerry, said Scott, ready to draw his Beretta.
Miner laughed. You Americans are so... How do you say it? Quick on the trigger? I can assure you it's nothing. Completely harmless.
May I? Slowly, Scott said,
watching the man for any hint he was going to pull a gun. Miner withdrew a small silver box that looked like a fancy holder for a pack of cigarettes and put it on the table between them. He depressed a button, and a row of tiny colored lights flashed along the top. He then pushed the right-hand side of the box flush with his palm, and a piece of the silver plate popped out, which he raised like the antenna on a portable GPS system.
Sometimes it gets some stares, and I explain it away as a designer cell phone. Technology is changing so quickly these days, people will believe just about any answer you give them. Actually, continued Miner, pointing as he spoke, this device is quite ingenious. Right now it is telling me via the green light here that neither of you are carrying any active recorders or transmitters. The yellow and blue lights here indicate that the device itself is currently emitting both a high and low frequency signal that will disrupt any eavesdropping equipment that might be placed within the restaurant or outside, such as a long-range parabolic microphone. It allows me to speak with a certain measure of confidence.
That's funny, Jerry. I wouldn't have figured you for a man who needed any help with his confidence.
Miner laughed again. You have a good sense of humor, Agent Harvath. I like that.
And I like your little gadget. Where would someone find something like that?
Actually, these are quite difficult to lay your hands on. I don't think you would have much luck, even if you tried.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have something quite similar, except it wouldn't fit in your coat pocket. It's snow white and about this big, said Harvath, making a show with his hands. About the size of a subwoofer, made by the North Koreans. I don't like carrying it in my pocket because it ruins the line of my suits, being so big and all. Maybe we could trade.
I doubt it, said Miner.
Ever been to North Korea, Jerry?
No, I haven't had the pleasure. I hear their women are quite subservient, very much into seeing to the needs and the pleasures of their men, much like the Japanese or the Chinese. What wonderful cultures the Asians have. But that's not why you asked me to lunch, is it?
It's part of it. You see, I'm very interested in your travel habits. There are some other destinations I wonder if you visited lately. How about Greece?
Of course. I was just there on vacation.
Along with Italy and France as well?
Asked Claudia.
You've done your homework.
Yes, along with Italy and France as well. I took a lovely cruise from Greece to Venice, and then...
Rode the train up through France and back home. First class, all the way,
interrupted Claudia.
Of course you have all the appropriate stamps in your passport to prove it, as well as cancelled train and boat tickets and credit card receipts.
Miner was surprised by what they knew, but he didn't let on. He forced himself to smile.
Yes, I do. I'm curious, Fräulein Müller. Are you contemplating a job change? Maybe employment as a travel agent?
That depends, Jerry. I think arms dealer might be a better job for her. You keep supplying her with the stolen goods, we'll sell them and cut you in. How does that sound?
Offered Scott.
It was most unfortunate to hear that part of the same cache of missing armaments turned up in the family barn of the case's lead investigator.
It must not look very good.
If you want to talk about something that won't look very good, it's you and your cousin, said Scott. Somehow, I don't think prison uniforms will flatter either of your figures. The fall of the cloth is all wrong these days, and prison tailors just never can keep up with the latest trends from Milan.
Miner's smile became very strained.
Agent Harvath, one phone call and I can have you immediately taken into custody. Your government is very anxious to have you back. I'm not sure what for, but it must be serious.
Do you want to talk serious, Jerry? Serious is you using your cousin to pose as you around Europe, while you're actually in my country kidnapping our president. How much did you make? 1 million? 5 million? 10 maybe?
Kidnapping your president? Agent Harvath, don't be ridiculous. I was nowhere near America when the kidnapping happened. As a matter of fact, I haven't been there for several years.
Not since cross-training at Little Creek? Asked Scott.
A slight pulling back of Miner's head told Scott that he had surprised him. He pressed on.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot about you, too, Jerry. I know, for example, that they won't put you and your cousin in the same cell. No, two handsome guys like you, they'll want to make sure you both have a chance to share your love. You seem pretty tough, though. My guess is that you'll get to be the husband, but you never know. They put a big enough guy in there with you, and you might have to be the wife.
Agent Harvath, this is hardly the kind of talk that we as gentlemen should be exposing Fräulein Müller to.
You see, that's where you and I are going to have to agree to disagree, Jerry. My career and my life are basically through. It's funny how being a gentleman doesn't seem so important when that happens. I have nothing to lose, and that makes me very, very dangerous. Not to mention, unstable. I've got you and your friends in the States to thank for that. Now, let's talk some more about you.
Agent Harvath, there is no question in my mind that you are a disturbed individual. I think the best thing for us to do...
Chew tea, hissed Scott.
The command stopped Miner in mid-sentence.
That's right, you slimy son of a bitch. You know, you are one dumb motherfucker. Who do you think you've been playing with? Did you actually think we weren't going to nail you and the rest of your little pussycats? Whoops, I'm sorry. It's lions, isn't it? Your men are a disgrace. What kind of a sorry-ass unit are you running? If they're not leaving clues at the farmhouse you used as a staging ground for the kidnapping, they're running their mouths off at the Jungfraujoch in Serbian while their bullets were hitting everything but the intended targets. You might want to work with them on that. And while you're at it, I'd seriously think about how long Senator Snyder will hold out before he rolls over on you. You think you have him over the barrel as an accessory? But if he asks to cut a deal before you do, you're out of luck, my fine Swiss brother. How's all that sit with you? Or do you want to hear about the photographs and evidence we have relating to your little assignments in Kosovo and thereabouts, as well as how my country is going to have every PLO wacko on your ass for the murder of Hassan Youssef? You really know how to bury yourself, don't you?
Miner was absolutely silent. For once in his life, he had nothing to say. Every single element had been planned. Each and every piece of the equation calculated, weighed, and anticipated. Everything had been thought out, except this free-floating rogue Secret Service agent that had somehow managed to connect with Claudia Müller.
How in a million trillion years did these two ever find each other? He wondered.
What's wrong, Jerry? Lion got your tongue?
Miner composed himself. You know, Agent Harvath, Fräulein Mueller has been a little too quiet, and you have been a little too vocal. Do you know what this tells me?
No. What does it tell you? I'm dying to know.
It tells me you have nothing. You have no concrete evidence at all. You dragged my poor cousin into this to try to intimidate me. I came here to meet with you, and you have nothing but spurious accusations grounded in fantasy. If you really had something, you would have used it. Why bother coming to me? I also think Fräulein Mueller is in very serious trouble, and will undoubtedly be facing an inquiry, and most likely a trial. Somehow in all of this, she got connected with you, which is not going to help her career. I think you are a deeply disturbed individual, and she would do well to get as far away from you as possible. Miner reached across the white linen-covered table and retrieved the silver box. Turning it off, he retracted the antenna and put it back in his blazer pocket. Looking at Claudia, he said, Fräulein Mueller, I am very sorry for your circumstances. I am also sorry that this man was able to cloud what I had thought was sound investigative judgment on your part. A word of advice. Enjoy your lunch together. It will be my treat. But walk out of this restaurant and never see this man again. You are in enough trouble already. Goodbye. Miner placed his napkin on the table, slid his chair back, and stood up.
You know, Jerry, there's one thing that bothers me. Humor me for a moment. How is it that you can kidnap, smuggle out of the country, and then hide one of the most recognizable men in the world?
Well, Agent Harvath, I once again maintain my innocence, and can only say that in my life, I have learned that under God, all things are possible. It is my sincere hope that we do not meet again.
67.
It appears as if we are no further along than we were when we started, said Claudia.
Come on, Claudia. You don't believe that. Of course we are. We aren't exactly where we want to be, but we certainly have made progress. We talked to the cousin, and we know he's involved. We can be sure Miner used him as cover so he could be out of the country with a perfect alibi. Why else would he have come to meet us for lunch if he didn't want to find out exactly what we know?
Well, now he knows. I think it did him more good than us.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Why do you say that?
Say what?
Maybe, maybe not.
Why don't you just say what you are thinking?
Claudia sounded irritated.
What's bothering you?
The way you talked to him.
He was taunting us.
What were you thinking? You sounded crazy. And the language you used was awful. Is that standard law enforcement practice in America?
It can be. I didn't mean to offend you. Miner is used to being in control and having people follow his orders. We needed to send him a message.
If the message was that you are unstable, I think he got it.
Actually, that was the message. I wanted him to know what he's up against. He needs to understand that I'm convinced he's responsible, and then I'll stop at nothing to nail him. He knows we're onto him, and it's just a matter of time before we have enough to get him.
So, we sent him a message. Are you happy?
No, not completely.
Why not?
It was the last thing Miner said. It didn't make sense to me. I don't know. Maybe it was just the translation.
What thing?
When he said, under God all things are possible. In English we say, with God, not under him, except in our Pledge of Allegiance. In Spanish, I know they say, vaya con Dios, go with God. It's normally with, not under. Is it different in Swiss German?
No, we say with as well. Maybe he made a mistake.
Miner's act is a little too polished for me, but anything's possible.
Scott started to laugh.
What's so funny?
Asked Claudia.
Look who's grasping at straws now. Claudia smiled, more out of a feeling of defeat than anything else.
At that moment, the waiter reappeared at the table and presented Scott with a bottle of Saint-Emilion Grand Cru. Scott waved him off, saying,
We've changed our minds. We won't be having lunch.
But, said the waiter in halting English, you are Herr Miner's guests. He has invited you. It's all paid for.
Then I'll tell you what,
Are you married?
No, sir.
Girlfriend?
Yes.
That's a nice bottle of wine. Take it home tonight and share it with her. She'll love it.
And the mules?
You and the staff can have them. We'll be leaving shortly.
The waiter removed the bottle and retreated to the kitchen.
You know, I'm beginning to associate wine with unpleasant moments in my life, said Claudia.
Why?
Well, at the end of the first lunch I had with Miner, he ordered dessert for me, a sweet wine that he made a very big deal about. It was foreign, but not from France. He said an American friend of his had introduced him to it. It was supposedly very famous and very hard to get. This hotel keeps a private reserve for him. He was unbelievably pompous about it and practically insisted that I drink it. The whole experience made me extremely angry.
Wait a second. Back up.
Back up?
A dessert wine. Now I remember.
Last night there was something about what Andre Martin had told me, something connected with Switzerland that I couldn't remember. It was a small piece of information that I had let go of as inconsequential, but it might not be.
You said an American friend turned Miner onto the wine?
That's what he said.
Scott racked his brain for everything Andre told him about the wine. It was a gift from Snyder, who had lied to him about being in France when he really was in Switzerland. The wine couldn't have come from France because why? Because the sugar content and therefore the alcohol level were too high for EU standards. It wasn't made in the EU. It was made in...
Claudia, was the dessert wine from South Africa?
Yes. How did you know?
When Senator Snyder returned from his trip to Switzerland, he brought Andre Martin a bottle of wine. Snyder said he had been in France, but Andre found out that this type of wine wasn't available in the EU. Snyder was obviously lying to cover his tracks.
We've got to be talking about the same wine.
Let's get the waiter to bring us a bottle so we can check it out. After all, we are Herr Miner's guests.
I have a better idea. Follow me.
A front desk clerk pointed Claudia and Scott toward the office of the Hotel de Balance's food and beverage manager, Johannes Schepp. After a short walk down the cream-colored marble hallway, they arrived at a door marked Schepp. Claudia knocked, and a small voice from inside told them to enter. Schepp was about the same size as his voice, balding with bifocals, and looked around 60 years old.
How may I help you?
Said Schepp, looking up from a pile of papers on his neatly arranged desk. Claudia replied in English, signaling to Schepp that the conversation would not be continued in German.
Herr Schepp, I am Claudia Mueller of the Federal Attorney's Office, and this is my colleague Peter Boa of the South African Bureau of International Fraud.
Claudia flashed her credentials, and Harvath stood still with his hands at his side, but tilted ever so slightly, so Shep could see the butt of his Beretta protruding from inside his jacket.
"We have reason to believe," continued Claudia, "that your hotel has been trafficking in illegal goods smuggled from South Africa."
"Illegal goods? This is a most serious accusation. I must call the manager about this."
Scott stopped the man as he reached for the phone. His South African accent was pitifully off, but he figured it would be enough to fool Shep.
"I don't need to speak with your manager. If I did, I would have gone to see him first. Instead, I came to see you. Just because I come from South Africa doesn't make me stupid, okay?"
Yes, sir, of course. I didn't mean to suggest..."
"Enough yammering. If you cooperate, there's a chance you can get yourself out of this, and neither the hotel nor your manager need suffer any embarrassment."
"But why would I hide something from them?"
"Mr. Shep, if you only knew how many times your name has come up in our investigation."
"My name? But I have not done anything illegal."
"That's what you think," said Scott,
as he pulled a piece of paper from his inside pocket, completely revealing the gun this time, and pretending to read from it.
"Have you ever heard of Tommy the Torch, also known as Top Shelf Tommy?"
"No, I have not."
"How about Patrick the Ace?"
"Once again, no."
"Jeff the Matchmaker?"
"Herr Boa, these names sound more like they come from an American gangster movie,"
said Shep, whose upper lip was beading with sweat.
"They might sound funny to you, but my government takes them very seriously."
They actually sounded funny to Harvath, too. Sometimes his ad-libs were spectacular,
and sometimes his warped sense of humor got the better of him. Harvath had always been the type of person who would laugh in church, and, knowing he was not supposed to, couldn't help laughing harder. Claudia saw the need to draw the interrogation back into the realm of not only respectability, but believability, and took back control.
Herr Shep, each of these men have mentioned you when questioned in South Africa. They work at a rather exclusive winery that, among other things, has been violating international customs regulations with their shipments. Is any of this sounding familiar?
Well, we do have several South African wines in our cellar, but we purchased those through a Swiss distributor.
No, these men specifically stated that the wine was delivered here to the hotel in the name of a certain individual.
Turning to Harvath, she said,
Mr. Boa, do you have the name on your notes there?
Yes, the name is Gerhard Meiner. Ring any bells, Shep?
Yes, I do know Herr Meiner. He is a regular customer. We keep a case of dessert wine for him. Vin de Constance. Has the hotel done something wrong?
That depends, said Claudia. Why does the winery name you as their contact in Switzerland?
I would imagine because the wine was shipped here for Herr Meiner, but to my attention. Had I known the transaction was illegal, I would have politely refused Herr Meiner's request.
Ignorance of the law, Mr. Shep, is no excuse.
This could reflect quite poorly on the hotel and your career, said Harvath.
Herr Shep, said Claudia, easing comfortably into the good cop role.
I think your participation in this affair can be minimized, if not forgotten, if you would be willing to offer us a few moments of cooperation.
The man was definitely eager, and his head nodded up and down so quickly that Claudia was afraid it would snap right off his neck.
Now, you state that you only received the wine. You didn't order it?
Yes, that is correct. From what Herr Meiner explained, a friend of his arranged it as a gift. It is extremely difficult to get. The estate only sells this wine in a limited quantity.
Herr Shep, we would need something to corroborate your story. A receipt, a bill of lading. Do you have any paperwork that came with the wine?
I have a file for Herr Meiner, said Shep,
as he moved from behind his desk to a row of file cabinets.
Sometimes the wineries will include special handling or storage directions with the shipments. I always keep all of this information together.
Claudia looked over at Scott, who rolled his eyes. It took Shep no time at all to find what he was looking for.
Here it is. This is the shipping and order information that came with the delivery. I don't know if this would be helpful to you, but some tasting notes and a small promotional piece about the wine was included as well.
Shep showed Claudia and Scott the paperwork.
Herr Shep, said Claudia, this may prove to be very helpful. We will need to take this with us, but you are free to make a copy of it if you like, to retain for your records.
That is very kind of you. I would hate for my records to be inaccurate. I don't need the promotional piece, but the other things I should copy. The machine is at the front desk. Do you mind waiting a moment while I make the copies? I'll do it very quickly.
Very well, Herr Shep. We appreciate your cooperation.
In a flash, the man was out the door, and Scott was half-scanning, half-reading the promotional piece aloud.
In the 18th and 19th centuries, Vin de Constance was the most celebrated wine to come out of the Southern Hemisphere. Napoleon Bonaparte had 30 bottles a month shipped to the island of Elba to ease his confinement. It seems the King of Prussia used to knock back a few glasses every night after dinner, as did Louis XVI, Frederick the Great, Bismarck, and a busload of Russian czars.
Now I know why Miner's lecture to me about the wine seems so knowledgeable. He memorized the tasting notes, said Claudia.
Wait a second, said Scott.
What?
She asked, drawing closer to try and read over his shoulder.
What is it?
In Sense and Sensibility, Jane Austen apparently recommended Vin de Constance as a cure for a broken heart.
So?
Guess who else wrote about it? Charles Dickens in Edwin Drood.
Dear Aunt Jane, yours, Edwin, said Claudia. The code between Miner and Senator Snyder.
Bingo.
When Shep reappeared, Claudia accepted the originals of the documents and told him that if he didn't hear from either her or Herr Boa again, it would mean they had decided to let him off the hook.
They thanked him and quickly left the hotel.
68. When they come out, kill them both. And this time, no mistakes, commanded Miner over the radio, once he was in his car and had driven away from the hotel. Klaus Dreyer and Anton Schabel were both waiting outside the Hotel de Balance for Scott and Claudia to appear. Klaus carried a 9mm Walther P4 pistol with a sound suppressor, and Schabel carried his favorite H&K MP5 SD1 submachine gun, which was also silenced. Both weapons were compact and easily hidden beneath a jacket. Schabel and Dreyer made a decidedly deadly duo. Miner had indicated to his men that the wait might be at least an hour, as he had purchased a last meal for the condemned couple. The shooters were taken by surprise when Claudia and Scott exited the hotel less than 20 minutes later. They turned right and walked along a narrow, relatively deserted passageway that hugged the hotel's service entrance. Scott had thought it best to leave Claudia's car in the parking lot by the Mauthauskirche and walk the 5 minutes to their rendezvous with Miner. The passageway turned to the right, and as they began to follow it, a hail of sharp plaster rained down on top of them, while a small utility window in the building in front of them shattered in an explosion of glass.
Move!
Yelled Scott, grabbing Claudia's arm. The shots came from behind, and instinctively, Scott steered them in the opposite direction. When he came to the Rathauskai, the pedestrianized area bordering the Reuss River, Harvath pulled up and looked around the corner before pulling Claudia out with him. They ran as far as the Hotel Schiff and then ducked into its old stone colonnade.
Who's after us?
Claudia demanded while she panted for air.
I'll give you two guesses. Either it's the American hit team or Miner's men. My money's on Miner's guys, but they're both equally capable. I don't want to wait to find out. Let's keep moving, shall we?
They walked quickly forward, and Scott glanced behind him to see if he could spot the shooter or shooters.
Claudia, look behind us. See the two women with the baby carriages? To their left is a tall guy in a long dark coat. That's our man.
Another quick tug on her arm, and Claudia turned back around and moved faster. They were out of the colonnade and getting ready to cross the bridge when a series of spits came from uphill to their left. Scott whirled and pulled his Beretta. A man dressed in a blue ski parka was making his way toward them from the direction of the Kornmarkt. He melded into a group of people and prevented Scott from getting a clean shot.
There's a second one. Run, he said to Claudia, and the two of them took off down the quay.
They ran past the Rathaus, the Zum Waisenkreuz, the Pickwick, the Hotel des Alpes, and at St. Peter's Kirche, steered a hard right and ran up the creaky stairs of the covered wooden bridge known as the Kapellbrücke. Scott looked over his right shoulder as they ran across the bridge and saw Bluecoat coming down the quay. The man in the long coat was nowhere to be seen, but Scott knew he couldn't be too far behind. The man in the blue coat looked around and quickly drew the pistol from his parka. The suppressor looked as if it was a foot long. Reflexively, Scott pushed his hand down hard on Claudia's head while yelling,
"Gun! Get down! Get down!"
Claudia dropped to her stomach on the damp wood. Because the side of the bridge was about 3 feet high, they were now completely hidden from view. But they were far from safe. Scott yelled,
"Keep your head down and move!"
Just as splinters of wood began flying only inches behind them. The man in the blue coat had seen where they'd ducked and was firing blindly into the sides of the bridge, hoping to get lucky. Had the man been using a machine gun, he could have cut a much wider swath. Harvath had caught one break. He didn't expect to catch another. It was only a matter of moments before the man in the blue coat would be on the bridge, closing in on them from behind. Scott urged Claudia on, and the two ran as fast as they could, crouched beneath the shield of the bridge's outer wooden wall. Halfway across the river, the bridge edged to the left. They had put enough distance between them and the man behind. What they needed now was speed to increase the gap. Scott stood up, and Claudia did the same. They were both breathing heavily, yet they pressed on, their feet thumping along the wooden planks as they raced for the other bank. When they drew alongside a small series of gift shops and the bridge's tower, Scott's heart seized. Coming around a bend from the other direction, the direction of their hoped escape, was Longcoat, Harvath saw him pull out a piece of weaponry he knew very well, an H&K MP5.
"Shooter at 11 o'clock! Down! Down!" yelled Scott.
Both he and Claudia literally hit the deck. Startled shopkeepers had no idea what was happening, until they saw the pair draw their weapons. Scott's was first out, and he let loose with a booming volley of 3 rounds. Longcoat disappeared somewhere where Scott couldn't see him.
"Check our six," he now yelled to Claudia.
"Six?
Behind us, 6 o'clock. Check for the man with a pistol."
Claudia spun just in time to see the man in the blue coat coming around the turn in the bridge. She fired 4 shots from her 9mm Sig Sauer P220, which sent the man running back in the direction he had come.
"Are you okay?" Scott asked.
"Yes, he took off, but I don't know for how long."
"I don't know either. I think they thought they'd surprise us. I doubt they were expecting such a fight. They're probably in radio contact, so it won't take them long to regroup and come back."
"If they're going to, they'll have to do it soon. The police will be here any minute."
"Yell to the shopkeepers in German and ask if we can get out through the tower."
Claudia did, and then responded to Scott.
"No, the only way out is by either end of the bridge."
"Can you see the man in the blue coat from where you are?"
"No, I can't. Do you see the other man?"
"I don't see him, but they're close."
The roof of the Kapellbrücke was a series of posts and rafters covered with wooden shingles. He wasn't going to win any awards from the Lucerne Historical Society, but he didn't care.
"What I wouldn't give for a nice sawed-off shotgun right about now," thought Harvath.
Rolling onto his back, Scott raised his pistol and aimed at the roof, trying to avoid the overhanging paintings the bridge was famous for. He squeezed off 5 rounds. Half of his magazine was now empty. The bullets ripped through the brittle wood shingles, filling the moist air with dust and exposing small bits of sky. The pigeons and white seagulls that had remained on the roof were now flapping their wings as hard as they could to get away. Scott and Claudia had the slight advantage of being in a crook in the bridge where neither of the shooters could see them very well.
"When I count to three, I want you to hop up on the sidewall there and hoist yourself into the rafters toward where I shot those holes in the roof. It shouldn't be too hard to peel those shingles away. Start making a bigger opening the minute you get up there. I'll cover you."
Claudia squinted up.
"Okay, I understand," she said.
"Do you have an extra clip of ammunition?"
"No, I don't. Had I known I would be doing so much shooting when I left my house on Saturday, I would have stolen a crate of bullets to go with those missiles in my parents' barn."
"Very funny. We need to conserve our ammunition. If you see the man in the blue coat, I only want you to take 2 shots at him, no more. Do you understand?"
2 shots. I've got it. Ready when you are."
Scott rolled back onto his stomach, facing where he had last seen Longcoat coming up the stairs. There was still no sign of him. He took a deep breath and then began.
1, 2, 3.
He swept his pistol from side to side, expecting Longcoat to show his face, but there was nothing. He glanced quickly over his shoulder and saw that Claudia was already hoisting herself up onto the lower rafter. He knew she could no longer be his eyes for the man in the blue parka, so he rolled sideways against the wall and looked behind him. While the bend in the bridge was an advantage, it was also a disadvantage. Without standing up, he couldn't tell how close or how far away either of the shooters might be. Above, Claudia was beginning to tear at the latticework, pulling away loose shingles and opening a wider hole. With his back against the wall, Scott ejected the magazine from his Beretta partway and verified how many shots he had left. Slowly, he slid himself over to the place where Claudia had been. He pulled the slide back, just a fraction, to make sure there was a round chambered, and got ready to make his move. Glancing overhead, Scott saw that Claudia had opened the hole wide enough and was now beginning to wiggle through. It was his turn. Using the wall to support his weight, he pushed himself upward. His head was almost at the level where it could be seen. In the distance, he heard the braying of European police sirens. Time was running out, and the shooters would be emboldened to make one final push. Scott was sure of it, because that's exactly what he would do. He took a couple of deep breaths and raised the Beretta. He fired in quick succession, 2 shots toward where he'd last seen Longcoat, and in the direction of the man in the blue parka. Tucking the pistol into his waistband, Harveth vaulted onto the edge of the wall and prepared to grab hold of the rafter, when muffled spits started coming at him from both directions. Longcoat and Bluecoat were returning fire. From their positions, they hadn't been able to see him when he was on the bridge floor, but now that he was standing on the wall, he was completely exposed. A bullet missed his forehead by a whisper and crashed into the rafter he was reaching for. Without thinking, Scott jerked his hand away, and before he could steady himself, lost his balance and began to fall backward. If he landed on one of the pilings below, he knew the result would be fatal. So he used his powerful leg muscles to give himself one big push outward. Sailing over the water, he saw the look of horror on Claudia's face as she stood on the sloped roof of the Kapellbrücke. Pulling his knees into his chest like a child cannonballing into a swimming pool, Harvath braced himself for impact. 69. The shock of the frigid water stunned him into immobility as the swift current grabbed him and rapidly pulled him beneath the bridge. After the first few seconds, his body's natural instinct was to struggle to the surface, but Harvath fought it. He needed to stay as deep as possible. The two men on the bridge would be waiting for him to appear on the other side, their side, where they would begin firing. As he looked up, Scott could see on the surface of the water the shadow where the bridge ended and open sky began. Just as he suspected, as soon as he was out from beneath the bridge, the men started shooting. He heard the plunk, plunk, plunk of bullets hitting the water all around him. He saw the rippled air bubble tunnels as the shots drilled their way toward him from above. He swept water past him with his arms in a desperate attempt to get closer to the bottom. Suddenly, the bullets stopped, but there was no time to try and figure out why. The current was sweeping him along even faster now. Glancing skyward again, Harvath saw the shadow of another bridge as he passed beneath it. Knowing it was important to preserve as much of his core body heat as possible, he slowly pulled himself upward. His lungs took in huge, burning gasps of air as he broke the surface. He saw that he had passed the second bridge and was a sitting duck in the middle of the river. Taking another large gulp of air, he submerged himself. Kicking his feet and pulling himself forward with a breaststroke, Scott steered himself underwater toward the north bank. When he came back up for air, he noticed that he had passed the Hotel de Balance. The river was too fast. He needed to grab hold of something. Anything. The cold was numbing. His fingers refused to move, and it was all he could do to ball his hands into fists. His head pounded both from the shock of the cold and the exertion. Another bridge was coming up fast. It was anchored in concrete islands, and there were what looked like iron rings attached in places close to the water level. If he could get a hold of one of those rings, he could at least rest for a moment and figure out what to do. He set his sights on a ring and allowed the current to carry him toward it. It was only a few yards away. He stretched his right arm out of the freezing cold water, willing his fingers to obey and grab hold when his hand made contact. He knew his fingers wouldn't know when they were touching the iron. He would need to watch and tell them when to close around it. He was closer now. Only a yard away, maybe less. Plunk, plunk, plunk. The shots were wildly inaccurate, but they came in rapid bursts, tearing up the water in all directions around him. The shooters were back. Their inaccuracy told Scott they must be firing from the other side of the river. He heard the roar of two shots being fired from a non-silenced weapon somewhere behind him, and he prayed it was Claudia. Bullets kept splashing around him. And he knew he had no choice but to forget the ring and submerge himself once again. His strength was ebbing at an alarming rate, and he felt that despite his awesome training in deep cold, there was only so much more he could take. Scott sucked in another huge breath and once again swam for the bottom. He knew that in cold water, the key to survival was to move as little as possible, as swimming took desperately needed heat away from the center of the body, and radiated it out to the limbs. The body cooled four times faster in water than in air of the same temperature. The effects of extreme cold could take over very quickly. The river continued to sweep Scott along at an awesome rate of speed. He counted to 5, and, not seeing any rips of bullets carving into the water around him, decided to surface. He needed to find some place to get out.